I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com and founder of One Life Tools. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, Canada's unique podcast conversation that enriches lives, empowers careers, and energizes organizations. Welcome to a special edition of Career Buzz. Welcome back to the Thoughtful Techno-Sapien. Today on your show, Balancing the Technology Tensions of Our Time. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, co-founder of One Life Tools and practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com. And I'm pleased to be your host today on the Thoughtful Techno-Sapien. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Today's episode was developed in collaboration with Engineering Change Lab, a catalyst for change in the engineering community. In the Thoughtful Techno-Sapien, we explore the evolving nature of our relationship with technology at all levels, personal, organizational, and societal. The techno in Techno-Sapien refers to the use of technology. When you think of technology as tools, you see that tool usage is arguably the most defining characteristic of our species. We sapiens have co-evolved with our tools and technologies. When humans invented fire, for example, it allowed us to pre-digest our food and we eventually evolved less strong jaws. Our relationship with technology is fundamental to who we are, even at a biological level. Today, we find ourselves at a point in history seeing everywhere both the promise and the perils of our technologies. Hollywood shows us promising tales about how our relationship with technology will benefit, but many more movies are dystopian and disastrous. In the Thoughtful Techno-Sapien, we talk to people at the intersection of profound technology tensions. We explore how they and you can be more thoughtful in relationship with technology. We seek ways to avoid technology misuse and unintended consequences, and to ensure technology is helping us create the world we want to see. Today, we look at tensions around our energy systems and the future of energy. What role does oil and gas play? What about renewables like solar, geothermal, wind, hydro? How do we balance the environment and the economy? Alison Cretney is Managing Director of the Energy Futures Lab. It's an award-winning initiative to accelerate the transition to a fit-for-the-future energy system. Alison manages the strategic direction and operations for Energy Future Lab, including supporting dozens of entrepreneurs, energy company stakeholders in generating opportunities to identify, test, and scale up new initiatives and collaborations. She's worked at the intersection of energy, environment, and collaboration for over 15 years. Alison Cretney joins me live by phone from Canmore, Alberta. Welcome to the show, Alison.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
So glad to have you here. There's so many significant tensions if we look at different energy futures. But for listeners who may not be familiar with Energy Futures Lab, your organization says it brings together teams of thought leaders, innovators, and influencers to guide a social process design for transforming Alberta's energy system. So before we get into the conversation about tensions, what should listeners know about Energy Futures Lab?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I think I'll just mention at the core of the lab is a diverse group of 65 leaders from across Alberta's energy system, and we call them fellows. And it probably wouldn't surprise you to know that that group includes executives from electric utilities and oil and gas, or clean tech and renewable energy entrepreneurs or government agencies. But there's also economic developers and financiers. There's Indigenous leaders, environmental advocates, university professors, even some artists, and much more. And so what we do is we bring this group together to address current and emerging challenges. And ultimately, it's about generating opportunities to identify, experiment, test, and scale new initiatives that help move us forward.
Nice. Now, in your work related to energy and our collective transition to some kind of different future, it's really a potentially polarizing issue. It looks like there might be winners, there might be losers, and it can have some pretty difficult conversations. So what are the important tensions surrounding this transition? What is the nature of this transition from your perspective?
As you well said there, tensions are at the crux of any transition. A system that's in transition is one that has competing forces pulling it in different directions. And that includes the parts of the system that don't necessarily want to change. So, you know, a big tension in this space is where we need to go, the question of transition to what. And in Alberta, and I think much of Canada as well, when we talk about where we need to go, you know, a vision for a low emission future, the role of oil and gas is always an elephant in the room. You know, it's a basis for tension and really for extreme polarization. You know, on this issue, there's divergent and competing visions around what our energy future might entail. You know, on one hand, you've got, you know, a view that oil and gas is the lifeblood of our economy, and oil demand is rising globally. The world's going to need fossil fuels, oil and gas, for many decades. So, therefore, you know, perhaps let's produce it as fast as possible. Or the other end of the spectrum, you know, fossil fuels are dirty and unsustainable and have no place in a low-emission future. So any investment then into oil and gas is perceived as locking us into the wrong path. The shorthand for that would be, like, let's keep it in the ground. And I can certainly share more about the ways we're working with this polarization and reconciling these views in the Energy Futures Lab. But, you know, a second tension is around the pace of transition. You know, perhaps we could agree that change is needed, that the energy system of the future won't look like what we have today. You know, we may even be able to agree on some of the characteristics of what that future might look like, but how to get there? You know, what parts need to change and in what ways? And, you know, how fast do they need to change, at what pace? And as you alluded to, who stands to win or lose something in the meantime? That's really at the crux of it. About navigating the sequencing and the timing of a transition is tricky and certainly fraught with tension. And then, Mark, maybe a third one I'll mention is the challenge of building the energy system that the future requires of us. It's actually not just a technical challenge. We can sometimes get caught up into thinking that, you know, perhaps if we just develop the technology fast enough, we'll be fine. But, you know, in the pursuit of technological innovation, we can tend to ignore or perhaps even be blind to some of the many hurdles that need to be overcome in the softer space of ultimately of people, of culture, and even like our core identities. And yet these forces can have a huge impact on whether a technology is even considered, on its ability to be adopted, or ultimately to be widely deployed in a manner that's beneficial to society.
So you've just touched on three different tensions, at least, and it's a huge topic, I mean, in Alberta and in Canada and worldwide. So let's take each one of these in turn and dig into them a little bit more, understand what's kind of at the heart of the tension. And I know Energy Futures Lab is involved in each one of these, so we can have a look at what you're doing to try and deal with it, mediate it. The first one you mentioned, let me just give a quick highlight for listeners. It's the transition to what is tension number one, the pace of change, how fast are we going to go, who wins and who loses is number two. And this kind of, you called it the softer side or the people side, it's the culture, it's the communication about these changes is number three. So if we start with number one, the transition to what, and that's a huge one. What'll be the next way that we access and use energy? So what's going on with that tension?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the last few years, the fellows in the lab have been doing what I like to say is the really hard work of, you know, trying to see things from one another's perspective across very divergent, often very divergent viewpoints. They've been forging a shared vision for Alberta's energy future, and ultimately seeking areas of common ground to launch collaborative initiatives together. And on that tension that I really often is the crux of it around the role of oil and gas in the future, some common ground was found in the lab by recognizing that the fundamental issue with oil and gas isn't purely the oil and gas itself, but rather the way that we're currently using it. For example, burning it and emitting the carbon into the atmosphere. So, you know, what if we radically rethink how oil and gas is currently used? And there's actually lots of solutions that can be identified from turning this on its head. But, you know, a great example I'll share quickly is with around hydrogen. So today, the heavy-duty freight transport sector, the trucks on the road, are pretty much all burning diesel and emitting CO2, emitting carbon dioxide. But as it turns out, you know, hydrogen is actually well suited for freight. And in fact, right now, a group of freight and energy companies led by the Alberta Motor Truck Association, they've created a $15 million demonstration project to design and manufacture two hydrogen fuel cell electric trucks that'll be fueled by hydrogen, hydrogen that's produced from Alberta natural gas. And these will be the first vehicles of their size and capacity built and tested in the world. And if you think about what that means for Alberta and Canada, you know, the opportunity is converting oil and gas resources into hydrogen fuel, putting that carbon back into the ground, to producing a zero-emission transport fuel, utilizing the industry of today. And actually, there's some excellent research done by a group called Cesar, led by Dr. David Lazell at the University of Calgary, who's shown that producing and exporting hydrogen in this way would actually generate, you know, 2 to 4 times more economic activity for Alberta than producing and exporting crude oil for diesel we're currently doing today.
That's a great example, and I think a real eye-opener, and you mentioned common ground, and, you know, it's so easy to get polarized when such huge issues are at play here. So your example is one that says, hey, there's alternate ways that we can think of using oil and gas instead of either or. It's kind of a both and. So that demonstration project, you know, I'm on the energyfutureslab.com site, and I'd encourage listeners to have a peek, because many of these projects, Allison, that you're talking about are right on that page. That's oil and gas. And can you just say a little bit more about that transition to what, that tension? I mean, we're thinking about oil and gas, and that, as you said, is the elephant in the room. And we have all these alternative ways of generating energy in Canada, from hydro to geothermal, and I know we're going to talk to the other Allison in a few minutes about that, and mm-hmm. solar and wind. What role do they play?
Yeah, I mean, the way we tend to think about it and talk about it in the lab is very much all hands on deck. We need all of these. All of these are important elements of our energy future, and when we step aside outside of that, it's either this option or this option, and you can only have one or the other, which really is the root of that polarization. We actually find it, you know, it's actually in the tension between those opposing views that's actually the place of highest creativity, and when we're, you know, when we're sitting in sort of one camp at one end of that polarization, we're actually then excluding a whole solution set by not being able to see it from where we sit. And so what we do in the lab is really invite people into a space where, with a mindset of seeking common ground and solutions that move us forward, essentially. The lab itself is, you know, the fellows I've mentioned that developed a vision for Alberta's energy future. And really that's the anchoring point. That's the guide to that really creates the pole for innovation.
You've mentioned this common ground a couple of times, and that seems to be the work of it, to try and really balance these tensions using, I don't know, some kind of social tools to get people to find that middle ground. Can you just say a little bit about how that happens? How do you facilitate that? How do you engage what would be an otherwise polarized conversation to finding the common ground that you're mentioning?
Yeah, I mean, we use a lot of different techniques, but it's a lot about inviting people into a space and coaching them on how to listen to one another, how to, engage in a way that it's not about, not first and foremost about having their own view heard, but rather with the intention of hearing others, which, you know, we are then inviting people into a way of being that where they in some ways have to, you know, temporarily loosen their grip on their own viewpoint. And so then, you know, there's that creates some of the rules of engagement for stepping into the lab space. And then we, you know, it's just different types of activities that we take people through, and that helps build that, you know, social capital and trust between participants, so that when things get challenging, there's also those relationships that you can sort of fall back on. And then, as I've, you know, then the orientation overall always being towards seeking common ground. So, you know, asking those questions: where in this is there some alignment? Some shared value that we might be able to move this forward together.
Right. A great skill. I know I saw some language on your site calling it the radical middle, and it is radical when you have such opposing points of view. I should let listeners know you're listening to The Thoughtful Technosapien here on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto, worldwide at CIUT.fm. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. We're talking today to Allison Cretney. She's Managing Director of Energy Futures Lab. And we're talking about the tensions in the future of energy in Alberta and in Canada. Allison, briefly, let's look at those other two tensions, and I want to take us then into an example, and I know we have another guest who will join us in a couple of minutes to talk about that. The second tension, how fast, and who's going to win and who's going to lose? How do we think about that tension?
Yeah, I mean, one of the elements on the question of pace and how fast, I think one of the ways of almost reframing that is, in some ways, there's a choice here around taking the opportunity to, you know, plan the transition consciously, to get involved in actually shaping what we want, versus, you know, to some extent, you know, digging in our heels and wanting to, you know, stick with what we have today, and ultimately being disrupted by the changes that are coming at us. And so, you know, one of the ways we navigate this tension in the lab is by aiming to have initiatives or projects of relevance at different stages of the transition. You know, some that produce results in the near term, while others are more those moonshots that prepare for a vastly different future. And, you know, we're always looking for solutions that capture the imagination and open up options and possibilities for next step, rather than locking us into a single path. And some of the types of projects that really, I think, invite people in are things that use assets in today's energy system to develop the industries of the future, something like, you know, producing geothermal energy from abandoned or declining oil and gas wells, so turning what will ultimately be a liability into an asset producing emissions-free electricity and heat for the future. Or, you know, developing a lithium industry in Alberta. So, you know, with the transition in our energy system, we're already seeing more electric vehicles, more renewables, and this requires batteries for storage. And lithium is a very important element in battery technology. So one of the lab initiatives is focused on developing Alberta's lithium resource from oil field produced water. And so, you know, these examples of developing these industries of the future, not in spite of what we have today, but actually because of. And so leveraging our assets and skilled human resources towards building that future energy system.
Clearly, one of the tools of this change is innovation. And you know, you've now shared a few stories with us or examples, geothermal from abandoned gas wells, lithium, the demonstration projects with the trucks. If we just bring that for a moment into the third tension about the cultural side and the communication and what we're going to say about this in the public. And some of these are technical solutions, and people may not understand how does that work. I mean, geothermal people, I think, have a generally vague understanding of lithium. So how do we move into that third tension and start to have that conversation and shift the culture and the conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question, and certainly some of what we're aiming to do with the lab is to share those inspiring stories and finding ways of doing that in ways that are accessible. You know, you've likely heard the Peter Drucker quote, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Yes.
And that, you know, meaning the best laid plans for technological advancement can be quickly sidelined by cultural forces. And, you know, just as a quick example of how important all of this, these softer pieces are, you know, one of the lab projects is applying blockchain to aggregate generation from rural solar sites as a way of generating sort of cost savings and a mechanism for these small rural generators, like farmers, small rural businesses, to access additional revenue from the emission credit market. That probably sounds perhaps confusing or overly technical, but in short, you know, it's a technology which increases efficiency and transparency across unlimited users. So there's a huge opportunity here to support a more interconnected, transparent, accessible electricity system by facilitating real-time information flow between all stakeholders. And yet, as the EFL fellow and co-founder of a company called Rewatt Power, Pragit Nibber, as she would tell you based on her learning from this pilot, you know, the technology development was actually the easy part. Like, the tougher part was getting all the necessary stakeholders on board and up to speed and comfortable with this new technology. And, you know, a big part of her work there was actually dispelling myths and perceptions of what, in this case, blockchain sort of is or is not, and ultimately demonstrating how it adds value to each person she was engaging with and each organization involved. So much about, like, de-risking the adoption for people to make it less scary and uncertain.
Great example, because I think people don't understand that, and it's an uphill challenge to try and break some of these more technical solutions down so that people cannot just understand it and see how it's a benefit. So that's hard. Well, I know we're going to be joined in a moment by Allison Thompson, and I know she's been a fellow with Energy Futures Lab, and some really interesting projects, I think, connected to the geothermal technology you just mentioned. Do you want to set us up for the other Allison to join us in a minute, and set us up for how she fits into your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so Allison, started her career in oil and gas, but has spent, I think, over a dozen years advocating strongly for addressing the risks of climate change and for ultimately for geothermal energy to be viewed as a viable solution. And I think one of the things I think would be interesting to draw out from talking with Allison is some of her experience in the lab, where I think it's a good example of that, of finding common ground in that radical middle space, because one of the people that she's been partnering with on the project that she'll talk about called Sustainaville, actually is a very proud champion of the oil and gas industry and the, you know, the economic benefits it has for Canada, and in many ways the two of them sort of embodied opposite ends of the spectrum of views of for our energy future, including a divide from political views as well. But through their experience in the Energy Futures Lab, they ultimately found some common ground despite those differences. And it could be interesting to hear Allison tell her side of the story in that.
I'm Mark Franklin, and you're listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Career Buzz is brought to you by Career Cycles. Take inspired action toward making well-informed career and life choices. Go to careercycles.com to learn about professional one-on-one career management programs using a story listening approach to career counseling. If you're a helping professional looking to scale up career management, visit onelifetools.com to learn about the Who You Are Matters game and online storyteller. My guest today is Allison Cretney. She's joining us live from Canmore, Alberta, and she's the Energy Futures Lab Managing Director. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on The Thoughtful Technosapien. And we're joined now by Allison Thompson. So we're going to get our Allison straight. Is President and CEO of Borealis Geopower and Chair and Managing Director of the Canadian Geothermal Energy Association. Allison Thompson, do we have you on the air?
You bet. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks so much, Allison, for joining us. I really appreciate it. So Allison Cretney just talked a little bit about that Sustainaville project, and I've watched your videos on it. You spend like 15 or 18 minutes on the videos, which are awesome, and I encourage people to watch them. But can you briefly bring us into that and just say a little bit about that project and an example that that Allison C. was talking about?
Sure. Sustainaville is a concept of ours that really addresses kind of the rest of Canada. And so not everybody is on a natural gas pipeline and enjoys easy, convenient heating in their home, or not everybody is on the electricity grid. Lots of rural and remote communities in Canada that have energy insecurity, even though we have such an abundance of energy types in our country. And so for those communities that are near a geothermal resource, and so geothermal resources are usually located 1 to 3 kilometers beneath the ground, and just like oil and gas, we drill. However, we drill for a heat reservoir, so hot water or fluid that can move heat up to the surface that is typically at the same temperature that your furnace would be at in your home. So instead of burning locally a fossil fuel and also transporting a fossil fuel with a pipeline to your community, you can use the heat beneath your feet.
It's a great concept. You know, geothermal, people think about it, they know a little bit about it. So we've now just got an example of that. Allison Kretny, can you set us up? Like, how did this project, you know, with Allison and the other partners that she has, how did that come about through Energy Futures Lab?
Well, in this case, Allison's been working on developing geothermal energy for, I think it's about a dozen years, hey, Allison? And she brought that, you know, the Sustainable project into the lab and was speaking to its merits and potential, and certainly we got really excited about it, as did a number of other fellows who were able to provide various support in its development. And yet, I think one of the really interesting parts of some of the partnerships that developed to help Allison advance this project came from a surprising place.
So, Allison Thompson, do you want to say a little bit about how that emerged, finding some common ground, as Allison Kretny was telling us about earlier? You know, geothermal, it looks like a great idea, what you've just described, an abandoned oil and gas well. So how did that work from your perspective coming together through the Energy Futures Lab?
Sure. Well, I think at the heart of most businesses, you'd say there's a technology or there's a business plan, but there's also people. I think the real magic that happens in the lab is maybe not during the formal technical sessions. It's that time that you get to know one another and you get to be your authentic self and to have people understand maybe what your values are. And Borealis, we've been a B Corp or a benefit corp, a registered company, for the past 3 years. And there's other people in the energy value chain, be it on the fossil fuel side, who also have a lot of values-based approach to business. And in my particular case, a few years ago, with the downturn in the Calgary market, we were looking for a new office space that was more convenient. And I put the word out just before Christmas time. And I guess, you know, Allison or the EFL would say an unlikely person, became my white knight and my hero, and offered up sharing his space with his team. And his team is on the processing side of natural gas, and so very much facilities and processing and value add. And myself as a chemical engineer, I mean, we resonated with, I understand your business, you understand my business. We share similar pots and pans between the natural gas industry and the geothermal industry. And I think that whole force for good or wanting to share as part of our business ethic, that just transcends the technology or even the fuel that you're using.
It's amazing to hear. It's about conversations, it's about communication, even though there's these polarizing forces that might pull people away. You can bring people together to come up with these great solutions. What was your trajectory, Allison Thompson? I know you mentioned you're an engineer, and I saw you started out in coal and other industries that were more traditional. How does an engineer and others who might be listening to this broadcast and podcast, how can they bring themselves, how can they sort of feel empowered to be part of a solution rather than seeing themselves part of that polarizing problem?
Sure. Well, I think we just take yourself back to first principles. I went to McGill University for my engineering degrees, and he was taught more of a classical approach, not an application approach to engineering. And so, I learned how to use different types of engineering for any industry. I think the conventional fuels have really been a large part of our economy for the past, 50 or 100 years. But it doesn't mean that those technologies can't be used in other industries or those skills. So I think the technology transfer and the talent transfer from one industry to another can be seamless. It doesn't have to be win-lose. For me, there really isn't a radical middle. Maybe that's a very, very temporary pit stop. I think we can just, very seamlessly, I think more so than people think, move through this energy transition using skills that we've already learned. Example for me is, being a chemical engineer, being a facilities engineer with the big companies around North America, but mostly here in Calgary. And I think I really understand and have a lot of empathy for their environment that they're working in. It's tough. They have the environment to worry about. They have permits and regulations. They have stakeholders. They have customers. But they're using engineering or techniques or their human power to get the job done. And people want that sense of purpose or that pride or that accomplishment. You can have all of those things working in the renewable energy industry, as an example of one of the projects in ESL. I want to kind of go back to relationships, and this is another one of these bizarre moments in my own lab experience, and the empathy building. Even now in my late career, like building empathy continues. There is a moment where we had a circle session, and we were all kind of throwing out maybe headlines that we'd heard in the news, and one new member at the time talked about how he didn't believe in climate change or man-made climate change. Well, you know, that just set me off, and I couldn't really overcome that feeling that I was sharing space with somebody who held that value. But through conversation, through relationships, just a few months ago, actually at the last lab gathering, I carpooled. So, carpooled with an oil and gas person from Calgary to Edmonton, and we spent the bulk of the time talking about bike lanes and biking into the city. This is not what I expect when I hear about polarized, viewpoints. I mean, there is humans at the end of this, and we all have a lot more in common than I think the newspapers want to point out.
It's a great example, and it's so interesting to hear from an engineering point of view, and that's my first career also. I spent 10 years in engineering, and I think the public has this idea of engineers as being, really technical. And of course, there is a technical part to everything we're talking about, but the solution to get, as you say, Alison Thompson, past the radical middle, which you called a temporary pit stop into some future, requires these skills of building empathy. So what's your one piece of advice before we let you go, Alison Thompson, about younger engineers who are seeking meaningful work and purpose, as you mentioned, and how they can develop their leadership skills and get beyond the technical of the engineering background and education into this other space where you need to broaden your skill set, really, to be successful?
Yeah, I think what they don't teach you in engineering school is the entrepreneurial side. And while you may not own your own business, just having the school of hard knocks of how you may have to change regulation, you may have to change hearts and minds, as probably Alison correctly has already spoken about. There's more to a job, there's more to participating in the society than just your technical talent. You've got to bring your whole self and reach across the table, get rid of the table, hold hands, and go forward together.
Beautiful advice. Alison Thompson, thanks so much for joining us here on the Thoughtful Technosapien today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Alison. Thank you.
My guests today are Alison Cretney and Alison Thompson, the former from the Geothermal Association, director of Canadian Geothermal Energy Association. She was joining us from Calgary, and Alison Cretney from Energy Futures Lab. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on the Thoughtful Technosapien. Just to reflect on that, Alison Cretney, that was so interesting. I'd just like to get your reaction to this common, the radical middle. She called it a temporary pit stop, on the way to some future that we all agree on. What was your reaction to that statement?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the reason that we talk so much about the radical middle, and the reason why we actually use the term radical, is that there's just in today's environment, particularly around anything related to energy, climate, and largely economy as well, there's just such a push to fall into our camps on one side of the issue or the other. And Alison mentioned sort of headlines, and certainly headlines and sound bites, they give the impression that the only choice is some of these either or binary choices of, it's either you can have climate action or a thriving economy. You have to choose between jobs or environmental protection, for example. And certainly, we see these as false choices, and they really can keep us locked into us versus them, where them tends to be the ones over there creating the problems. And I think that the reason that we call it radical is because it to hold that middle space right now amid such intense polarization is radical. And my hope, I think, is aligns with what Alison was speaking to, is that we will be able to at some point move past this, the polarization. And I think that continuing to shine the light on this middle space between the poles and grow that space and helping to create new possibilities to get us unstuck, essentially the things that the Energy Futures Lab was designed to do, along with many others that we invite into that, I think that will start to shift things. That's certainly our hope.
And listeners can find out more about that, Sustainaville. It's actually on the energyfutureslab.com site. It's really interesting. And, I'm noticing one other thing, that Sustainaville is being built with a BC First Nation. And First Nations in Canada have been really vocal and are part of the story as we talk about pipelines in this country. That's so interesting to see their involvement. Can you just say a tiny bit more about how you've had Indigenous and First Nations people involved in the conversation?
Yes, yeah, so certainly we have Indigenous participants, Indigenous fellows in the lab. The important element of our vision for Alberta's energy system includes energy-based partnerships towards reconciliation with Indigenous people in Canada. And so a big part of our journey right now in the work of the lab is really digging into what that means and exploring how we approach that and how that can potentially serve as examples for how to do this work well and to essentially leave no one behind and actually use it to repair relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in the country. And certainly, I think, you know, Allison's work around, partnering with the local First Nation in the development of Sustainable is a great example of that.
If we shift it to a personal level, you know, we're talking about some of these really big projects and global or, you know, big scalable projects. On a personal level and for you, you know, just being involved in these tensions, how do you experience them on a personal level day to day? What behaviors might you have in your own life now that you've been so close to some of these tensions we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, Mark. And I think it's... You know, Allison spoke to it as being a journey, and I certainly feel like I'm very much on that. Like, I'm constantly learning and constantly being pushed and pulled to grow and shift. And a big part of, I think, growth is being willing to change our views on things or to be uncomfortable. And I feel like this work is one of the exciting parts of it is that there's, you know, constantly feeling uncomfortable. And actually, to be honest, like you asked about the personal level, and I think, you know, there's also this sense of, you know, at a very personal level, this sense of, some degree of cognitive dissonance around being, my work feeling very, very aligned with, you know, ultimately towards creating a low emission future. And yet when I look at, you know, at a very personal level in my life, not all my choices align with that. And it's that challenge of, you know, having a good understanding of, for example, the level of emissions that an individual needs to reach in order ultimately for our society to, and the world to stay below, 2 degrees of warming, for example. And then the reality that many of the choices currently available don't yet align with that easily.
Right, especially in the conversations we're having now about carbon tax and different governments in different parts of the country. And, you know, those conversations, I think, are really germane to the conversation. What are we doing on our own personal level? And carbon offsets and that's part of it, and efficiencies. If you Allison Thompson mentioned she had an engineering background, as do you. Allison Cretney, can you just say a little bit about your journey? How did your education in engineering and some of the work that you've done prepare you for the role you're in now?
Yeah, so I took engineering, chemical engineering at the University of Alberta, graduating, getting close to 18 years or so ago now. And at the time, I remember feeling some degree of resistance to the training because it felt like I was being trained to work in one sector, which, I mean, I think made sense at the time, given, you know, particularly in Alberta, universities were, you know, and engineering students were largely finding work in oil sands and oil and gas development. I remember feeling some level of frustration that there wasn't a broader view and some space for talking about some of the broader environmental and social issues around some of this, because, I mean, that was back in the midst of boom times, and the mindset was just very much produced more and as fast as we can, essentially. So I did work in the industry for a while out of school and, of course, learned a ton. But generally, again, some of that frustration I was mentioning sort of continued on as I found that we were often sort of falling back on sourcing ideas for just from what was, you know, familiar and already proven commercially viable. And it didn't feel like there, at least as being a young engineer, I didn't feel like I was exposed to a lot of the innovation that probably was happening, but I wasn't in those places at the time. And so I ended up moving more into consulting around sustainability and climate strategy, and and then eventually through that work began to feel like we're still these single entities trying to address really complex challenges. It felt insufficient. And so I think it was from there that I eventually found my way into doing more sort of in-depth multi-stakeholder work, bringing groups together to try to find ways of tackling these complex challenges together. And my journey, when I reflect back now, it sort of seems like there was a bit of a through line, but certainly didn't feel that way at the time. It often felt like I was, leaving one experience and going on to something new. And it's only been sort of in retrospect that I've really been able to see how each of those experiences really built on one another. And, I'm able to draw on them in what I'm doing today.
That's so interesting to hear that through line and connecting the dots, I often say, as people try and figure that out. You work with a lot of other people, other engineers and other people, not only in Energy Futures Lab, but elsewhere. How can you kind of speed up their, you learn things the hard way and it took a while. Is there a way that you figured out to communicate some of these things to, say, earlier career people that you might work with to help them kind of get through to, the through line, get them doing what they're wanting to do and gaining that clarity, especially as they are technology leaders or young technology leaders in their own right?
That's a great question, Mark. I would say probably the single best thing to do is engage with diverse viewpoints. Seek out and actively engage with people who see things vastly different than you do. And to really approach those conversations in some of the ways that I was speaking to earlier of just showing up to listen and to really ask why and really try to understand where that other person's coming from. Because I feel like it's in that engaging and exposing yourself to all different ways of thinking about our situation and what some of the challenges and opportunities are, and just being open to that. I think that's the best way to sort of accelerate finding out how and where you best fit in that. I think we learn surprising things that way. And I think that's always more room to expose ourselves to surprises.
Yeah. So that's great advice. Engage with diverse viewpoints. If I just pull the lens back a little bit for a couple of more questions and then wrapping up in about 2 minutes, just going way up to the 30,000-foot level, I mentioned on the intro, the average listener might be looking at movies that are, some of them are scary futures, Black Mirror kinds of things, or some people are looking at positive futures of technology. Star Trek comes to mind. What's your personal opinion about the default trajectory of societies, of our relationship with technology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to me just how you mentioned movies, and I feel like so many of the stories that we're creating as a culture right now have this sort of a doomsday or apocalyptic feel to them. And I think that speaks to some of the deep-seated sort of worry that people can often feel when thinking about the future. And certainly with some of the big challenges we're facing as well around urgent imperative to act that climate change creates, for example, or some of the pace of change around technology and automation and artificial intelligence. But I think there's a lot of hope as well. And that's where, for me, with the great fortune of the work that I'm doing, what I'm exposed to day to day, I mean, what gives me hope is literally the hundreds and, actually thousands of people from all walks of life across the country and, millions globally who are working at change and who are finding solutions. And I think it's really in the actively participating in solutions and finding ways to connect what you do and what you bring to that solution space. That's where the inspiration and hope lies. Projecting forward from where we are today doesn't always lead to hope, but, when we set directions for what we want and use that as the anchoring point and then figure out how to make it happen, I think that's what gives me hope, and I think that's what propels people forward.
Nice. That's a great way to pull it all together, because it's sort of like it comes back to, I think, what you just said, engaging with diverse viewpoints and trying to, get people who don't normally talk together to speak together, which is exactly what you're doing. If you had a magic wand to continue this good work and really ensure that we're using technology to improve our situation here on in this in province, country, and worldwide, what would you do with that magic wand?
I think I would I would use that magic wand to paint an inspiring future that each individual can see themselves in. And I feel like that's some of what we're trying to do, but we certainly don't have a complete picture, but we've got like pieces of it. And so we all have pieces of it. And if we were to be able to sort of put that together, I think we'd have this inspiring future where each person can see themselves in it. And I think that's what would help us move forward and lead the change rather than waiting for it to come to us.
Beautiful picture and magic wand usage there. Allison Cretney, thanks so much for joining us here on the Thoughtful Technosapien today. Appreciate it.
Having me, Mark.
You're listening to The Thoughtful Technosapien, a special edition of Career Buzz. I want to let listeners know, if you want to find other episodes of The Thoughtful Technosapien, check the April 8th episode with Sam Burton from Mozilla. It was a really interesting conversation about the internet and the tensions around the internet. She writes the Internet Health Report. You can find that at careercycles.com. If you click on the podcast button, you'll find that and other Career Buzz episodes. Also coming up on June the 5th and 6th, listeners should know about the Imagine Your Workplace Conference. It'll be at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, fabulous place for a conference every year. It focuses on techniques to get employees healthy, inspired, and productive. More at yourworkplace.ca.
Thank you for listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Find us on iTunes or visit careercycles.com/radio to subscribe and download past episodes. Get inspiring career stories full of twists and turns, actionable ideas from career experts, and new ideas to empower your own career in life.